Thank you for having me, and really have to say, I enjoyed the worship this morning so far. It's great. All right. So this morning early in our class, we talked about worship. There was an introduction, more of a reminder of what worship is. Want to start out with another personal story, if that's okay. I grew up in a lot of congregations like this one. My father was in the Air Force for a little while and then in petroleum engineering for most of my life as a kid. And so we moved around a lot, every 3 years on the average, sometimes 2 years. And I left home when I was 17 and went to different congregations in Texas and Florida, Alabama, working and going to school. And I counted the other day 12 different congregations, not visiting these congregations, but becoming part of 12 different ones from the time I was little. And I got a feel that, you know, most congregations have in regards to their singing and their song worship. And usually, if they wanted to improve their song service, they would bring in a musician. They would bring in possibly someone who taught music in high school or more, college, something like that. A faithful brother who had this talent or academic training. And that week, the song leaders would get together and they would learn to pitch the song. They would learn the 4-beat pattern, the 2-beat pattern, the 3-beat pattern. And the church would be encouraged to sing faster and louder, and it would work for a little while. And then it would, like we all do, we revert. Even where I go, we work on this regularly and we revert as well. Mechanics. The congregations that I was a part of, every one of them had a virtual split going on 24/7. There would be in the church people who love to sing. There would also be people in the congregation who didn't like to sing. And so when it came to song worship and meetings like this, those who liked to sing, they just were thrilled. They would take it in. They would teach it. Those who didn't like to sing, they didn't like that meeting, because they equated song worship with music only. And that was at every congregation I was at. We would have a singing night, and some wouldn't come because it's just singing night. And those people that loved to sing, they would be there. They'd be picking out all the songs and getting upset with those people who weren't there. This is how it was in all those churches. In fact, people, the song service was a little bit of a divisive topic, even though people loved each other and hung around each other and were faithful in their attendance. It's just they attributed to that song worship to those guys over there who like to sing, and they'll sing anything, and he's in a barbershop, and over here he can play the clarinet. And that's how it was. And it's still that way. Maybe not here, and maybe not in some places. And so that's really one of the reasons I go to congregations, is to help the non-singers understand this is not music only, and to help the singers understand this is not music only. In fact, it's not music primarily. Hymns are basically religious poems, sacred poems. We can read them or we can sing them. The hymnal that you have has a layout, a certain page layout called phrase notation. And at the end of every line, there's a break. It's basically poems laid out like poems and the music wrapped around it. It's so you can read those things when you're by yourself and get strength. But this low-grade division that goes on in congregations, you know, I think for some, when we read this morning Psalm 122, I was glad when they said, "Let us go to the house of the Lord." That was written by a musician, David. I think for some people, they would say, "I was obedient. I did it. I sing. Why do I sing? I sing because I'm commanded." There are many, many reasons to sing besides that. That's a good one. But there are so many, many reasons besides that. And so that's what we're here to talk about. If we want to work on our song worship, there are three things we want to talk about this morning. And one is that singing and worshiping sometimes are different. Another point that we're going to talk about is that hymns are words. Hymns are not music. They have music, but they're not music. And the last point would be that song worship is a mental process. Well, let's go on and we'll take another look at this. We saw this morning that our song worship, successful song worship, uplifting, strong song worship requires a congregation who is willing, not a congregation with talent, a congregation who's willing, a leader. Adam did a great job, but it doesn't have to be as good as that even, just a leader who can get the fundamentals. And then good hymns. Good hymns means good words. We'll be talking about this point, first of all, is that singing is not always worshiping, and worshiping is not always singing. This is a good way, a couple of illustrations here. This is a good way to point this out. I live in Columbia, Missouri. And I had heard that there was a group of shape note singers. They're called Sacred Harp Singers. They don't use the seven shape notes we do. They use four. This is from the 1800s. You may be familiar with them, Sacred Harp Singers. There's was a large group in Missouri and a large group in Alabama in the 1800s. And so I'm kind of mean. And so I kind of sent a little email to see what they would say. And my email said, "Dear so-and-so, I've not been to this Sacred Harp singing." These are basically hymns. A hymn like "I'm Bound for the Promised Land," for example, would be sung there. "I've not been. Are these worship services, or can I come and just sing along if I like to sing? Thank you." And the reply was, "Hi, Craig, we gather together because we love to sing this music. Our singings are not worship services. They're more like social gatherings." Well, they're singing hymns, Sacred Harp. You have several in your hymnal. But do you see the point that some people who like to sing have no interest in worship? And in the church, of course, they do. We have fantastic brethren, but that's not driving it. That's not driving the love. The love is, I just love to sing. And so, but you can see here that you can be singing out of a hymnal and not have any interest to worship or any goal. This is another web. I've redacted some of this but this is a series of lectures. And this is their social calendar. And in their social calendar, it has these events you can take part of if you want to take a break from the Bible lectures and so on. The first one is Sunday singing. The next one is a golf tournament. You could be a part of that. And the other is high tea. It's recreational. Our hymn singing sometimes is recreational. Sometimes the people who drive it in a local congregation are those people who love music and they just, oh, they can't wait to sing. And if you're not singing a hymn, they'll sing something else. That's not what this is about. I was in one place and, I hesitate to tell the story, but you have to tell the stories to get the point across. I apologize for being negative. But in this place I was visiting, my job has me travel a lot. So I was in another state. And the song leader at the beginning went up and wrote 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And told the congregation, that's our song list for today. That's right. He was very cutesy. And they had R.J. Stevens' book, Hymns for Worship, good book. But the first hymn is Holy, Holy, Holy. So they're singing Holy, 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 and the deacons are going around fixing the thermometer, the shades, and so on. I just really wonder if they even know what they're singing and who's listening. This ain't a time to fix the shades. I wonder sometimes if God would just crash into the building and all we could see is his feet and up the throne and never see all the head, what we would think. Then we would know he's here. Later, hymn number 5 was the invitation song, and it was How Great Thou Art. And while they were singing How Great Thou Art, they were welcoming people to the front if someone needed to come forward. And they were whispering around, and I thought, man, somebody die in the foyer or something? Nope. All during How Great Thou Art, they were whispering because they wanted to make sure to remember that the new workbooks for the men's class are on the back, and you need to pick those up on the way out. They're singing How Great Thou Art, and they're fiddling around with this stuff that's not important. So, hymns, they mean things. There is an audience, and we have to stop what we're doing and concentrate. It's not the time to walk around. They would never do that during the Lord's Supper. That's another level of holiness, evidently. Singing in the Bible was not just recreational. Here are some occasions. There are 20 scriptures here, so we won't be reading these. At the dedication of the temple, we read some of that. When the walls of Jerusalem were being rebuilt, Nehemiah. When cleansing and repairing the house of the Lord and designated convocations, as they're called. After the deliverance, singing about that. In battle, there's a great chapter, 2 Chronicles 20. You know the story, where the people went out in front of the army, walking and singing, give thanks to the Lord, his loving kindness is everlasting. In battle, on travels, in times of guilt, during the persecution and imprisonment, in times of joy, in times of sorrow, this idea that this has gotten recreational, you know, that's not what this is about. And the reason for bringing it up is, you know, my plan is to stay here and go. And someone hopefully will pick this up and make this their baby. And it doesn't have to be somebody who just loves music. It's not that. These are times that are not just, they're not singing for just recreation here. So sometimes people will say, singing in church is not my thing. I have a brother. He's faithful. He's a good brother, Kurt. And he says this to me all the time, you know, Craig, singing's not my thing. And I understand what he's saying. Not everybody likes it. But I think he's getting that because of this culture that we talk about in our congregations, where the people who just like to sing are sort of pulling the parade along wherever it goes, because this is, you know, that guy teaches music here in the second grade, so let's follow him. You know, but singing in church is not my thing. You know, I've wondered before, I've said this to him, do you read the Bible? Yeah. I said, are you in a book club? You know, I don't read the Bible because I don't like to read. Well, I don't like to read. I don't. You know, there are people as they're in a book club, or they just, you get around friends and they tell each other the titles of books. Have you read this? And they change books. Well, I don't really like that. But I do like to read the Bible. And so many people, they don't like to sing. But if you put good hymns in front of them, good, strong hymns, they will like to sing those. Have you ever noticed at a funeral? What happens at a funeral? They get a capable person to lead. Doesn't have to be a professional opera singer, just somebody who can lead. The congregation is locked in on those words. They're ready to sing those words. The person who passed away may have said, I want this sung at my funeral. Why? Because the music is going like that? Or what? No. Most of the time, they choose these hymns because of what they say. And the music is not in the way. Good music, but it's not in the way. And so those funeral hymns are memorable. And now, not every, that's just an example from a funeral. We could do this. You know, I led the hymns after 9/11, where I worship. And I can remember, wow, these things look different now. These hymns look so different. And the words came off the page. And so that audience that Sunday, it was the Sunday after the Monday bombings, but they were locked in, and that was a tremendous song service. So yes, there are people who don't like to sing, but if we give them good hymns and someone who can lead this capably, not a professional, it'd be fantastic. It'll be fantastic. That, by the way, is what it's like for me, where I worship, the church where I am. You know, they have about 10 song leaders, but they've got 5 men there that know how to pitch it and keep the tempo going. And they just are so good they don't just pick specific hymns for a reason. They go through and pick up these 2 verses. These 3 verses, they're so specific and they're so good. Every time I go, I know it's going to be that way. It's just a thrill for me. The other thing to mention here is that hymns are words. Why do we say this? We said this several times this morning and we're saying it again. It's because we need to get rid of that virtual split that runs through the congregations, where the singers are running the show and those worshipers over here may not like to sing, but they don't really have anything to do with it. That's a singer's thing. Almost like we got somebody who works in construction, so they're good about fixing the water fountain and the windows and so on, and that's their thing. This is for everybody. The singing is for everybody. And hymns are words. Now here we can illustrate that pretty easily. This is an old hymnal. The oldest English hymnals were around the 1700s, Isaac Watts wrote the first English hymns. Before that, in English, people sang psalms. But in time, those hymnals incorporated music. For a while, the music and the hymns were not on the same page. They look like this. And so here it is, music and words on separate pages. Sometimes that's called a hymn and a tune. But see the difference? Even our denominational friends know the difference. Here is a hymnal where they started putting the words and the music on the same page. This is, O God, our help in ages past. And all those tunes have names. Graysbrook is the name of this one. This is Abide With Me, written by Light, who passed away before he ever heard it, unfortunately. And then this beautiful, beautiful music written by William Monk later. And they're separate. And when people, if you go to the library and you're looking for the hymn section, it won't be the music section. It'll be over by the English. Where I work, we have a huge library, and all of the, even the old hymnals, they're not in the music section. They're over by the literature. Abide With Me. And sometimes people talk about the lyrics in the music or the text in the tune, but really, it's the hymn and the tune. As we said this morning, when we read the Psalms, we're reading the Psalms, but we don't have the music. They're still Psalms that they sang. Those on the left are all hymn writers, well-known hymn writers: Isaac Watts, Fanny J. Crosby, Charles Wesley. They didn't write music. And on the right is Lowell Mason, who wrote the music for Near My God to Thee, William H. Doane, who wrote a lot of music for Fanny J. Crosby. Some of these, you see the difference? Some, they wouldn't write words. So there's a difference. What does that tell us? This is not really a waltz down a hymnody textbook. There's a reason for saying this. And the reason is, if you don't like to sing, hymns are for you. This is a webpage that discusses Isaac Watts, the father of English hymnody. That's like saying Isaac Watts is the father of words to be sung in worship. That's really what a hymn is. These are words to be sung in worship. A lot of hymnals, including this one, they'll have hymn tunes. There's a tune index that's music, and then there's a hymn index. They're different. You go to the Library of Congress website, they have a lot of audio recordings, old audio recordings. It's fun to listen to those. But if we look at this little pull-down menu, there is a section for it. You can't read it because it's small, but it says hymns and tunes. What does this mean? What does this mean? That if you don't like music, hymns are for you. This is a good way to illustrate it. The church's one foundation is Jesus Christ. I love that hymn. The church's one foundation is Jesus Christ. And in your hymnal, there are three tunes for that. You know the one that we sing with Stand Up for Jesus, and another one, Aurelia. There's another one, if you don't know it, you would really love it. It's a German folk music. But you can sing this hymn with different tunes. And there's a reason for doing that. The other thing is this music, which is called Web, can be sung for the church's one foundation, or can be sung with Stand Up for Jesus. There are two hymns there and one piece of music that illustrates the point. This is a split page. This is an old Scottish hymnal. It's probably about 80 years old now. And on the top are the tunes, and on the bottom are the psalms. So you can mix and match. What does that say? That this is not really about music. It is music, and music's important, and the Lord expects it. But really, people that are really into the hymns. Most of them that I know, some of them anyway, can't even write music. So as a congregation, if I'm going to, as a congregation, grow, the first thing I want to know is, this is for me. This is for me. I can't play. I can't sing Mary Had a Little Lamb. I can't do anything musical, but this is for me. Just like the Psalms that we read are for me. And the last point is that hymns and hymn worship, song worship, is a mental process. We're going to go through this a little bit now and then more tonight. And I forgot to say, tonight it's 5:30. Is that correct? 5:30. And so if the song leaders could come at 5, we'll do just 30 minutes early tonight. Then on the other nights, if the song leaders would come 45 minutes early, and that'll be explained. But anyways, so we'll go quickly through here, but song worship is mental. These and other parts of the body are necessary for good singing. There's a person who leads our, we have a choral group and that meets in Florida, and they sing, Scott Wyatt. He's not far from here in Cincinnati. And Scott is a professional. He sings around the world as a tenor. And, you know, he helps, he gives lessons. This is your diaphragm. This is your, you know, whatever. And it's very physical. But look at the worship process. The worship process is this. It's mental. It's the mind. Your hymnal, for example, your hymnal was pretty much compiled and edited by preachers and elders. And one of the preachers was David Maravilla. He's one of the lead editors. And David went through every hymn where the word Lord referred to Yahweh, and he turned the hymnal into what the New American Standard does. He turned all of those Lords into all caps, so that when you sing, O Lord, our Lord, you're not just saying, O Lord, you're my personal Lord. It's not that. You're calling him out by name instead of Baal or some other god. Yahweh, Jehovah, you are my God. It means something. These words mean things. He's a good musician, but he's that's not what he was doing here. Oh, Lord, our Lord, it's an example. And even in your PowerPoint, in your overheads, it looks like this. Oh, Lord, our Lord. You see that? It's about content. We're going to do one thing, and then we'll stop. This is my Father's world. Let's see, what number is that? I'm sorry. I think, is it E flat? Do you all know? See if you can help me find. I should have looked this up. This is my Father's world. Call it out if you find it here. 94. Okay. I'm just using that to get the key here. One of the things that helps us see the hymn. Yeah, there it is, E flat. We're going to sing just a couple of phrases of This Is My Father's World. Do you know that verse that says, This is my Father's world, oh, let me ne'er forget that though the wrong seems also strong, God is the ruler yet. That's a verse we need today. We need that so badly. You're familiar with what goes on in the school system. You're familiar with what goes on in the government. You know, the wrong is very powerful. So we're going to sing this just by memory and just this phrase.
This is my Father's world. Oh, let me ne'er forget that though the wrong seems so strong, God is the ruler yet.
Worship is mental. Try this one.
This is my Father's world. Oh, let me there forget that though the wrong seems all so strong, God is the ruler yet.
You can do this with many, many hymns. When we're singing a hymn, that content has to relate. And the good hymns that have lasted for many years, Be With Me, Lord, Bless Be the Tie, you can do this very thing with them. We're not going to go through it because we're going to save some of this. But singing with photos, it's not something that we do in worship, but it sort of trains us how to see the content that we're singing and make it more than just words on a page. So that's why we do this. It's just an exercise. I think we'll stop right here. It was said earlier by Adam that there are about 40 or 50 other PowerPoint slides on here. I didn't know how long to go today. I didn't know the service per se here at this congregation, but so we'll stop with the lesson there and pick up tonight. It'll be at 5 o'clock for the song leaders and 5:30 for everyone else. It is the time of our service where we typically offer an invitation. We don't close out, many congregations don't close out their services without offering people an opportunity to come forward to become Christians, to repent of their sins, to make change, to ask for prayers. And we'll be singing out of our book, Adam, I think. So if you would like to and you have your bookmark, come forward now while we stand and sing.